Real Devo. They're celebrating the anniversary of their big record that came out 20 years ago. And, well, we have a real deep discussion about what it's like taking care of your voice as a performer. And it's a really, really interesting conversation. I promise you, if you sit through it, like at least halfway through, we really go deep and in-depth with it. It's seriously, like, it might sound boring, but it's such an interesting conversation. I had a fantastic time talking to David, so that's coming up. Just wanted to remind you, I've got a brand new show launching in Canada this weekend in Toronto. Hello, Toronto! On 640 Toronto, Toronto's Talk, Today's News. It's going to be a really fun show. You want to check it out, 640toronto.com, also globalnews.ca. I'm going to be on 7 o'clock Sunday, immediately following Global National News. Make sure you go and check it out.
The stars live here.
Are you ready?
On air, online, on your smart speaker, and wherever you stream. Broadcasting from Montreal and around the world.
The Jeremy White Show, available wherever you stream.
Catch up on past interviews and episodes on demand now.
Subscribe so you don't miss any of it.
Our next guest is a member of the group that has sold over 30 million records worldwide, scored 50 number one hits, and earned 160 gold and platinum records across 35 countries. Isn't it weird to hear that read out like that?
It is, actually.
He's going to be celebrating the 20th anniversary of their big record. Going to be hitting the road as well with tons of tour dates around the world this year. IlDevo.com for all the details. Please welcome to the show for the first time, the one, the only, Mr. David Millen from IlDevo. How you doing?
Hey, how's it going? Happy to be here.
It's so great to be talking to you because you're somebody that's one of those artists that's sort of like an anomaly in a sense, because I talk to a lot of like pop people, a lot of rock, a lot of country, a lot of metal guys. But when I talk to your publicist, I'm like, oh my God, like, this would be a really cool interview because just how different your voice is and how different it sort of is, like the approach to performance and stuff. So it's just great to have you on the show. So I just wanted to say welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Like I said, is it weird to hear all those stats read out to you that way? I mean, like, it's kind of bizarre, right?
It really is. I think, you know, especially given that this was really not a whole lot more than a musical experiment back in 2004. You know, we were put together by the now legendary Simon Cowell, who at the time was really, you know, still coming up in the industry. In point of fact, the three other guys at the time had no idea who he was or kind of what his kind of claim to fame was. As far as they were concerned, it was just a record company, and we were all just happy to be there and, you know, get on with recording some music. And nobody knew what they were doing. It was a huge experiment. We were basically given 10 of Simon's favorite songs. And they said, what can you guys do with this with your voices that's different from everybody else? And we said, okay, let's move into opera gear and show you what we've got.
Right.
And, you know, that first album went gangbusters successful. And the next few albums, you know, pretty much did the same. And the success, which was just unprecedented, but also unexpected.
Right.
All of us coming from our, you know, careers. It's not like we were put together like a boy band and where we were kind of pinning our hopes and dreams on this. If it had fallen apart, we would have just gone back to our careers.
Right.
And that's part of what Simon wanted. He wanted seasoned professionals, not people that he would have to like cultivate and figure out, like, what are you going to sound like? So it was very unexpected for us that it would have so much success. And we really never took stock of it, you know, except for in moments when people would point it out to us, like you just did.
Yeah.
We never really took stock of it. It was always about the music. It was always about, you know, one track at a time, one album at a time. What are we going to do that we're going to be proud of and give it 100%? That's all we ever cared about. And I think that's ultimately what gave us the success. So, yeah, it is still weird to hear it, though.
It's interesting how he kind of put the whole group together. I mean, like, it's sort of like the One Direction approach, but like, you know, 10 years earlier in a sense. But like you said, you'd already had careers and you already were seasoned professionals. So it probably made it a lot easier for him.
You know, it took longer to find the four of us,
right?
Because he was looking for seasoned professionals. Mm. And I remember Carlos used to tell the story of, he was the first one to be invited by Simon, was Carlos. And Carlos, he told us that Simon wanted to make it a TV show. So there was a huge, you know,
this is almost like American Idol before I get all kicked up.
It was going to be something like Opera Idol, something like that. And it was a great big waiting room full of people who were going to, you know, give it their, you know, good old college try.
Yeah.
And Carlos almost walked out and he was like, what am I doing here? This is not what, and called his agent and said, why am I at this? This is a cattle call. This is beneath me.
Why am I in the cattle call?
I mean, there, in a sense, yes, but yeah. It's also like, if you know, if Maria Callas were to show up to a great big cattle call, you know, it would damage her reputation as being a seasoned professional to show up to something like that. And especially in the opera world, it's a highly scrutinized, you know, every audition you show up for is judged one way or another. Every performance is judged one way or another. And so it could really have looked bad on him because he didn't know what it was. None of us did. And his agent convinced him to stay. So he got in front of Simon and said, what is this? Why am I here? What are you trying to accomplish with this? And Simon told him, and he said, you're going to have real problems finding three or four more guys at this caliber because they're just not. And he said, and that's what Simon asked him. He said, why aren't they showing up? He said, you need to go through opera agents. We're not going to show up to TV cattle calls. You know, if you want people at this level, go through the opera agencies and find us. So he had to do that kind of one audition at a time. It took him 2 years and like 15 different countries to find the four of us through that process.
That's amazing how the scene is like that. I mean, like, I guess it's sort of like, you know, Brad Pitt or Matthew McConaughey showing up at like an open casting call kind of thing at this point.
It's kind of like that. Yeah. It's a good analogy.
Just rolling up there like, all right, I'll audition for it. Rolls up at the sides. Like. So we guys get together and this record comes out. I mean, like, what was the studio experience like the first time you guys get to meet each other? Do you guys get to hang? Do you build up a rapport together before you get in the studio? I mean, like, what's that like?
You mean back in the day or now?
Yeah, like take me back since we're celebrating the anniversary of the record. I mean, like, do you have any memories around that time when you first recorded that album?
Oh, absolutely. It was a very bizarre and confusing time for everyone, record company included, Simon included, the four of us.
Did the record company get it? Did they understand?
What's that?
Did the record company get it?
Well, it was their idea.
Oh, right. Okay.
You know, so it was their concept and they had brought the four of us in, but honestly, they didn't understand the operatic voice. The idea, the on paper idea, like the elevator pitch was, I like Andrea Bocelli. Simon's pitch to us. I like Andrea Bocelli. I like the three tenors. I saw it on The Sopranos. I love how that music makes me feel. I want to make a boy band version of that. What do we do? Here's the 10 songs I think you could do a good job at, and go. And the four of us had never met each other. They had, the record company didn't know our voices beyond our auditions. We took, there were some new songs, there were some pop song covers, there were some standards. They wanted to give it a flair of exoticness, this opera idea of singing in Italian. So they had translated all of the songs into Italian, French, and Spanish to see which language would feel the best. Turns out it depended on the song. So we would try every song in three or four languages. And it took like 4 months to get through that initial batch of 10 songs and listen to basically 40 songs back to see what sounded good, what was going to stick. It wasn't till we heard Unbreak My Heart and heard that back in Spanish, because Italian was a bit too formal. It was a bit too rigid. English sounded a bit too feminine, sounded a bit too much like the Toni Braxton. Spanish kind of had this really nice hybrid between the two. So we went with that, went back in the studio, kept refining it. Other songs, Spanish didn't work. Other songs needed a bit more formality. And other songs, like, for example, Mama, just needed to be in English. It just had to have immediate translatability to the emotional content of it. We had certain songs that kind of leaned more towards pop. Certain songs leaned more towards the classical edge. And we began over the next few albums kind of exploring, rather than trying to bring them all together, kind of exploring, okay, this song has a classical feel. How far can we go with that classical feel and not be too far outside this framework of this crossover that we've created?
Right.
How far is too far with pop? And we would kind of explore the different avenues. We didn't really spend those first couple of years. We tried to bond. We tried to build friendships, but you couldn't get past the initial hurdle, which was very much like the opera world, where you don't meet your co-stars until first rehearsal. You start rehearsing. There's a certain professional respect that you have. You give what you have to offer. The tenor sings the tenor line. The soprano sings the soprano line. Bit more confusing with us because we have one song that we need to divvy up between four guys. Mm-hmm. There was a little bit of, you know, kind of egoic, little bit of, you know, four fully formed professional men in their adult ages. We were in our 30s at that point. So there was a little bit of push me, pull you of like, yeah. You know, are you stepping on my toes? You're trying to take my parts of this and that. I'm like, and we would say, it's not up to us. It's up to the producers. Each one of us would go into the studio and record the whole song front to back. And then the producer would decide whose voices sounded which best on which parts. Once we had that in four languages and we've picked the version we like the best, after that, then we started layering on harmonic stackings so that by the time we got to the end of the song, we had this big kind of operatic-esque finale thing that we've become known for. And the hurdle of being brought together, we weren't friends first. We are amicable. We are friendly. We tried to hang out and become friends, mm-hmm. but you can't get past that professional hurdle because that's how we were put together. So, you know, as we kind of got into the first album, the second album, first tour, that first tour really bonded us in a way, more like family than friends,
right?
For better or for worse.
Yeah, because you're in adult, you're all in this together sort of thing.
Where you're all in this together. Nobody's going anywhere anytime soon. You kind of have to deal with each other. You're sitting together on planes. You're sitting together in cars. We're not sharing hotel rooms. Thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
But day in, day out for 9 month stretches, like 2012, by the time we got there, we were doing 9 month stretches of tours, which ultimately is unsustainable. And we figured that out.
Yeah.
But you just have to let it go. You have to let it go. You have to let it go. People get irritating. You let it go.
Yeah,
people are hilarious. You have to let that go too. Because if you start like really like digging into any one thing and then the other thing happens, it throws you for a loop. So it became very zen at a certain point, and it's kind of been there ever since.
It's funny you say that because it's like, you know, literally like 100% of the bands or artists that I've talked to are like, you know, they always say that 99% of the time it's about the hang. But at the same time, as long as you're good at what you do and you can get along, you're going to have a great time.
That is definitely true. That is definitely true. And, you know, long overnight flights to Australia and having a performance that night, mm-hmm. that just frays your nerves, right? Like nothing to do with the other guys. That just frays your nerves. The other part of it is that the type of singing that we do is really pinnacle athlete type singing.
Yes.
You have to have an equilibrium. You have to have a balance. You have to have your strength. You have to have your finesse. You can't just get up there and belt it out.
Yeah.
What we do goes several notches beyond just kind of like letting it fly. You have to be in control of your instrument. It's virtuosic to a large extent. And, you know, if your fingers aren't working, that is the priority. You have to get your voice. You know, I use the analogy like a violin, like a virtuosic violinist. Mm-hmm. Your voice is the number one priority. It's what people are paying for to show up. Yes, they want to show, they want to be entertained, but ultimately they do it through listening to that pinnacle athleticism we use with our voices. So that's number one. Everything else comes second, and it takes up 90% of your life,
right,
to live at that level all the time. So
yeah,
the number of times we go out to anymore, you know, 20 years on, the number of times we go out to dinner, you know, well, we've got catering at the shows. But like that we spend our off time together, I'd say it's maybe five times a year. Mm-hmm. Like when we were in Peru, we, you know, Peru's pretty special. How many times are you going to get to Machu Picchu? So we went to Machu Picchu. When we were in Beijing, how many times are you going to get to see the Great Wall?
Yeah.
We went to the Great Wall. It's things like that are like these momentous things that who knows if that's going to happen ever again in your life. we go and do those. Beyond that, not so much.
Does that annoy you, though? It's like you're in a band with these guys, and it's sort of like, why don't we hang out a little bit more?
Well, no.
Yeah. Perfect answer. That was a perfect answer.
No.
I'm good. I show up, I do my show, and yeah, you go do your thing, I'll do my thing. Let's talk a little bit about the voice, though, specifically because I'm also a singer. Like, I'm working on a record and stuff, but I'm also, like, on the radio every day. I host podcasts. I do interviews. I do voiceovers. And ever since I caught a certain virus that was going around a couple of years, you know, for the last little while, my voice is never the same. And I started seeing this guy in Toronto named Aaron Lowe, who works at the Voice Clinic over there. And he's worked with every big name you could possibly imagine. He's been there. But he works with a lot of opera singers. And he talks to me about, you know, what goes into an opera singer's daily warm-up routine or trying to get it to that point, or even like vocal exercises to get the air in there so you can sustain those notes. Talk a little bit about your process and, you know, what is your process to keep that voice at 100%, that performing level?
Well, I will back up to a year ago, December, where we were just starting the Christmas leg of that tour. We had spent all year on tour mourning Carlos, who passed away from COVID.
Yes.
And so we did an entire year of memorial performances for him. And at the very end of it, we switched gears and kind of moved into Christmas time. And it was sort of this hybrid performance of like our Christmas rep while also still honoring Carlos for, because every territory we went to, even though we were doing it for like an entire year, every territory we went to, it was their first time seeing this memorial show, and they were all still mourning him even a year later. Mm-hmm. So we were doing that, and we're in London, and this was the Thanksgiving prior to that. I was at home, and I caught the RSV, which is the infant respiratory.
Right.
I was exposed to that. I got that going into that tour. While I was there, I also got food poisoning, COVID, and also the flu. Oh. And it was the biggest nightmare of my life that caused respiratory issues that I'm actually just now really getting out of my system. We'll get back to your question in 1 second about what I normally would do.
Yeah, but it's all intertwined,
right?
But
in extenuating circumstances. Mm-hmm. Because not only did it affect the respiratory system itself, in terms of being able to feel like I'm taking a full breath, there's also, I was coughing so hard that I was coughing up blood. It wasn't like blood out of the lungs, but it was, you know, the cords slamming together, coughing so hard. After a while, edema starts to happen. And, you know, there is like blood in the congestion that's coming out as it's totally gross what I'm getting into. But
I know what you're talking about.
This is what we deal with.
Yeah, I've had it.
Yes. And beyond that, like getting past the actual infection itself, it gets into your nervous system. That amount of coughing, that amount of like panic of like, is my voice going to be there? And it also being on top of memorial shows, like there was so much emotional stacking. And there's emotional stacking that goes into our performances anyways. You know, people pay a lot of money to see us, and we have to deliver 100%. If you're not feeling 100%, that right there is a cortisol dump into your body of like stress hormone, which does not feel good on the voice, just that. Adrenaline, yes. Cortisol, no. Plus this fear of like, oh my God, am I going to let everybody down? Plus your cords are just not functioning because they've been slamming together. Plus your lungs aren't, it gets into your nervous system. Your vagus nerve just goes on Fritz overload. And this has been like for this last year, while we were recording this album, doing like somatic exercise to get that all to calm down. It's taken me almost an entire year to get to that point. That being said, that notwithstanding, the normal exercise of maintaining this virtuosity, as I'm putting it, being on tour, it's kind of like going to the gym. The more often you go to the gym, the less you have to do to get a good workout. And you also know if you're going every day, you get stronger. And the stronger you get, the less you need to push or give or strain or reach or anything, because everything's very kind of contained. In terms of getting ready for tour, that's where I think a lot of the, because you come off tour, first thing you want to do is just shut up and not sing, not practice. I don't want to hear these songs ever again. If I never sing again, that's fine. It's like that initial fatigue that happens coming off of tour.
You're like, thank God this is over.
That passes after a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
You know, depending on how much time we have to before the next leg of the tour, sometimes it's only a week. Okay, you just got to get geared back up. And those first few performances are, you know, maybe a little bit of like train leaving the station again. But at this point, I have been off tour for about 3 months at this point. The next tour coming up starts for the Double X tour. Starts in late April, early May in around South America. And that's going to be where a lot of like getting it's like not having been to the gym for a long time.
Right.
Stuff's going to be sore. You probably want to start slow. And if you start earlier, you know, maybe start with yoga. And after yoga, maybe get some cardio in. After that, get into the gym, start working. You're going to use lower weights than you used to use, but you know you're going to get back to those weights. Start with lower weights, start with higher rep, increase as you go. I'm using the working out metaphor because it seems to be holding up.
Yeah.
you can add weight in, you can add weight in. And I think this is the process for an opera singer. This is what you ultimately build your career upon, is that strength training of the voice. There's what we're doing right now, which is speech inflection range, which is kind of the air is kind of carrying the sound. It's kind of doing the work for you. I'm in a small room. I don't really have to speak that loud. Or, you know, I can dial it back and do a bit of vocal fry. It's enough for in this room. It's enough for a conversation, intimate conversation. On a stage, that's not going to cut it. So you have to work in a bit more core and a bit more core and a bit more core. And a bit higher range. And you just have to work these muscles in a very systematic way. And I did that for 6 years, 5 years in school, and a year of an apprentice program before getting into my operatic career. And you work in this way of strength training the voice until, you know, I was singing a full opera career for almost 8 years before joining Il Divo. And I think that all was necessary for joining Il Divo. If I had not had that degree of stamina and strength and finesse, I wouldn't have made that first audition. And I certainly wouldn't be able to sing these shows, which at this point, our shows are more difficult than any full opera I've ever sung. Because in opera, you go out, you do your aria, or you do the duet, or you do the finale, or you do whatever it is. You do your thing, you leave the stage, someone else comes on. They do their thing for a while. They leave the stage, someone else comes on. You get 3 hours of kind of this person. You get time to rest during a show. You may be singing 40 minutes all night long. Il Divo is 90 minutes front to back. We never leave the stage. And there's an operatic-esque finale every 4 minutes. It's crazy. It's insane. I don't know why we did it that way, but we did.
Oh my God. You didn't future plan it. That's for sure.
Something like that. Thank goodness.
So with that saying, like take it into consideration with, you know, the respiratory stuff. And I mean, like, yeah, I mean, 90% of the voice is the airflow that you're getting. Right. So I can imagine being cut off from that. Has that affected the power of your voice? Has it come back like at 100% yet? Is like, where are we at?
It's at 100%. But I would say you're exactly right. It's your breath flow. You have multiple pieces. I used to work in a vocal laboratory, so I can get super technical about the whole thing.
Right.
You know, you've got your diaphragm, which is a muscle that brings the air in. After that, the diaphragm just relaxes. And to get the air out, you have to use the intercostal rib muscles to compress together to get the air out of you. Mm-hmm. Simultaneously, the vocal cords are coming together to resist that air that's coming out of you, so that you can actually make a tone. And all of this has to be orchestrated in concert with each other. Each of these muscles needs to fire, and they're very delicate muscles. And they all have musculature systems independent of each other. And they all have to fire together in concert, or else the whole thing falls apart. If you don't get quite a deep enough breath, you won't be able to make it to the end of the phrase. Simultaneously, if you take too big of a breath and you're overfilled with air, then you have to, the amount of like compensation of, you know, and certain, and where I was finding it the most difficult was with catch breaths. So you'd be singing a phrase. That catch breath would cascade into all sorts of like, I'd overfill, I'd underfill, I wouldn't make it to the end, I've had too much at the end, I feel like I'm hyperventilating. Mm. The whole like coordination system, that's where I was saying like the vagus nerve, which runs throughout the whole, was, it itself was so fried, the different muscle systems were not getting the right nervic impulses to fire at the same time. So one thing would fire, another thing would fire, another thing would go, that's too much, clamp it down. Mm. So it would get a little pressed, or it would get a little free, or it would just do all these things, which was not in the delicate balance. And then the adrenaline sets off going, you're doing it wrong. And then you get into head games and you start trying to compensate for this thing. You don't even know what's happening.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like for me, it's like I was like drying up. Like I'd be in the middle. Normally, I'd be able to do like a 30-second commercial on like one breath, be able to read it through almost the whole way through. Because it's what you do. Like you do it every day. Once I was getting over this stuff, it was just like, man, like getting 10 seconds in, I'm like dry. I'm like dry as the Sahara Desert in my throat. Yeah. I can't even get like anything out after that. It's like it's razor blades in like the vocal cords. But then you think it's your vocal cords, but it's your not. It's not because there's nothing there. In reality, it's your air.
Yeah. I was having a thing happen with my vocal cords because they had been so, there was no actual damage, thank goodness. I went to a vocal clinic. They put the scope down. They looked, there's no actual damage. It was just the muscles that bring the cords together to stop the airflow. They were exhausted. Mm-hmm. So as they would come together, they had one of two modes. Either they didn't want to quite come together or they were jammed together. Mm-hmm. And either way, I wasn't getting like the sweet spot. So I was erring on the side of, you know, don't sing too pressed. Don't sing too forced. Better to kind of be in a relaxed position. Mm. Then those muscles started memorizing that and I started to lose the power. And I started to compensate with breath. And I was singing and I was holding my breath in and it wasn't my breath was getting stuck. I couldn't
couldn't get it out.
Expel it. Mm. All the muscles just started misfiring.
Wow. It
was so weird. So weird.
Yeah. Cause I mean like,
I went to at one point, cause all of this was happening pretty much since going on tour in 2022 to start the Memorial Tour. And it was one of those things I couldn't figure out what was going on. I wasn't sick anymore. I had gotten COVID at one point during that tour as well.
Yeah.
And things just didn't quite get back to normal. And I went to, at one point I got acupuncture, like what's a thing called dry needling.
Right.
Where it basically goes in, it's not like Chinese acupuncture. I was getting that too. Mm. Chinese acupuncture to just get the energy to settle down. But there was so many like overcompensating muscles like mm-hmm. that were getting involved in the singing that weren't supposed to be there because the ribs weren't doing that where they were supposed to do. Mm. So my pecs were getting involved. Right. So they were all like shortened and tight. So I'm getting dry needling to like force those to relax. It's kind of like cupping. You get a lot of bruising, whatever. And that particular therapist, whom I had known for like 10 years in the UK, who was who basically was saying, look, it takes like 2 to 3 years to process the trauma of the death of a loved one. And that processing comes in many forms. It's emotional. It can come in waves of fatigue. It can come in your nervous system. And so all of this happening all at once, like just giving myself permission of like, I have been in a state of grief for almost 2 years. Mm-hmm. Even though my mind is past it, even though my emotions have caught up with me and my mind has dealt with the situation, and I'm on tour, the rest of my body on a cellular level was still grieving. Mm. And so giving myself the permission of like, okay, you don't have to be perfect. It takes two to three years. You're actually normal in all of this. Just that in and of itself was like, okay, I can give myself the space to work through the rest of this. That's still, 3% there, 4% there. I've felt for the last like 4 months that I've been at like 93%, mm-hmm. which is enough. It's enough to get through what you need to get through.
Right.
But it's only in the last, I'd say, couple of weeks that I feel like I'm back to 100%.
Right.
It's just been such a crazy time. And I think a lot of singers, who've been going through this, my voice teacher was asking me, because I went through all these hurdles. He's got other singers that have gone through similar things. They get COVID, it turns into long COVID. Then it's like beyond long COVID, like, why is this still happening?
And yeah.
I asked him, I said, how many of these people lost a loved one? And he said, oh my God, that is, I know of at least one of them that they lost a grandparent. I'm like, it might be part of it. Mm.
Wow. You know what? It's funny. When I first started seeing Aaron, he asked me that first thing. He's like, are you stressed? And I was like, why? He's like, because I can feel it in your throat instantly. Mm-hmm. And I was like, really? Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how your body can really fight against you in that sense. It's like,
There's muscles in here. They're called the scalene muscles, mm-hmm. and they're connected to the trapezius here, and they go all the way in under the collarbone, and they connect into and support the lungs. They are fight or flight muscles, and they are muscles that are used to take panic breaths. Mm-hmm. And when they're triggered and when they're active, you are unwittingly taking panic breaths, and all the rest of your musculature is going, and even though you don't mean to, you're like, all right, I'm going to do my thing. I'm going to take a breath. I'm going to sing I'm going to speak for 30 seconds. I'm going to do this spot. Ready? And then all of, all the cascade happens in the rest of your body.
And nothing comes out.
Yeah.
So what do you think? I mean, say, there's singers that are listening to this. It's like, what's like your biggest thing you'd recommend for somebody that wants to improve their voice or keep their voice conditioned like that? Sounds like cardio is a really good idea.
Well, first thing I would say is everything in moderation. Everything in moderation. For some people, lifting weights makes them feel grounded. You do it too much, you're going to have fatigued muscles. You're going to have fatigued this and that. You might get to the show and you might feel more tired than you meant to, because you're like, you're in it. You're feeling the adrenaline. You're pumping. You're feeling good. Oh, you get to the show and you're like, the adrenaline's gone. Mm-hmm. Boy, little bit is good. Get in the body, get a little bit of work done. Cardio, same thing. You might feel that runner's high after like 5, 10, 15 minutes. You decide to run for an hour. Respirating at that rate for an hour, you're going to dry yourself out. You're going to show up to the show dry, or you're going to show up with all those breathing muscles. They're going to be a little bit fatigued. Mm-hmm. I would say any movement, anything that gets you into your body, if it's yoga, if it's weight training, if it's a little cardio, if it's a combination of all three, if it gets you into your body, great. I'd say no more than about a half an hour. And don't go for high intensity. Don't go for those HIIT workouts, because you never know how your body's going to respond afterwards. But anything that gets movement and motion and breathing into you, Kundalini yoga, for example, it's a hyperventilation system of yoga. just to get the breath going. But again, don't do the hour-long Kundalini sessions. Just do a few certain exercises. That can really like jumpstart you. And it, even like right before a show, doing a few rounds of kind of that shallow, deep breathing at a rapid rate, which feels shallow, that could jumpstart your breath. Once you're in your breath and you're like hyper aware of your mechanism without triggering adrenaline, which exercise can do if you overdo it, getting your awareness of your breath puts you back into your body and you start to inhabit your musculature rather than living up here and kind of puppeteering your musculature and hoping you get it right. When you're actually in here, you feel it and you become, you are the puppet without strings.
Mm. Wow. That's a really good way to put it. That was really profound, I gotta say.
Thank you.
That was incredibly, and that was a very educational and just, wow, awesome explanation.
Thanks very much.
You need to start doing TED Talks.
Well, you know, it's, I've thought about that. I've thought about, like, I know I have a lot of information. Like, yeah. I've been.
Well, you said you worked in a voice clinic and stuff like that. I mean, like, didn't you say you worked like,
It wasn't in a medical clinic. I went to Oberlin Conservatory in Ohio.
Right.
And they had, my voice teacher ran the vocal laboratory.
That's it. Yeah.
It was there. And
see, that sounds medical though. I mean, it sounds cool. Put that on your business card. It's like.
Should actually. It was basically everything except for the medical aspect of it. We didn't have a stroboscope that we could put down the throat or through the nose. But we had all sorts of measuring devices. We had an oscilloscope, which was like a plate that you would put between your nasal cavity and your buccal cavity to measure with two little microphones on either side of that plate to measure how much sound was coming out here and was nasal and how much was coming out just through the mouth. And opera singing, there's a hybrid of both. There's a sweet spot of about like 80-20. And this could actually show people, because you can talk about it, but when someone's inside their body, it all becomes informational and all comes up here.
Yeah.
When you put it into practice and you see the results, it's like biofeedback. We had like a spectrogram that like breaks the voice down into all of the harmonic partials. And it's the most demystifying thing you can do for your voice is to sing into this spectrometer because it levels the playing field. I can talk about this for hours.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is, it doesn't occur to me to talk about any of this unless someone is asking me intelligent questions like I feel like you are right now. I feel like you are asking me questions that are triggering all this information. If I just get up on a stage and start talking about it, it gets so dry so quick. It's just not fun at all.
But no, it's super interesting to me because it's like I talk to singers for a living and I'm also like a performer. So it's like, you know, hearing somebody at your level talk about these intricacies and just how, you know, specific things can get from your body to getting it out. It's like, you know, it's nice to be able to have this type of conversation because it's educational, you know.
Well, I do love talking about it. So, you know,
Well, it's really fun. Next time we'll just have an entire conversation about voice then, if that's the case.
100%. I'm in.
Look, we're running out of time, but just real quick, I got to mention, Double X, the 20th anniversary album coming out. And for the first time ever on vinyl, which is, whoa, right there. Look at that. Come on. Come on. Now, are you guys doing that on like clear vinyl? Is it like a special color? Is it just like classic black or? Oh, look at that. Look at that. Come on. That's like silver. Silver?
Yeah, this is silver. I don't know if you can see some of the.
Yeah, you can see like the swirl and like the grain.
You can see
it.
The swirl. It looks like the watermark on a samurai sword.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But we also have a special limited edition where the wax is gold. Ooh. like the sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's silver and gold.
Well, that's to celebrate your 160 gold and platinum records across 35 countries. You need to have it.
You gotta have it.
Hey, real quick before you go, just one last question because we're talking about voice and stuff. You know, you think of, because I'm a big classic rock fan, and like you listen to guys like John Bon Jovi, who's basically lost his voice almost entirely at this point. Paul Stanley from Kiss, all his years of singing super, super high. Where do you think the loss of the voice comes from? Is it a muscular thing? Is it a drop in cardiovascular airway, like getting it out there? Where do you think that voice loss comes from? Is it maturing, like getting old?
There's at least 130 different points across the vocal mechanism that can break down at any given time and cause vocal loss. I don't know if that number is entirely accurate, given what I just said about working in a vocal laboratory.
Yeah.
That was hyperbole. There's just so many things that it could be. So it's, I think, trying to nail that all down into like, here's what happens, is an impossibility.
Yeah.
You know, specifically for rock singers, there is a type of singing that they do, which is quite dangerous. I remember when I was in Pittsburgh and I was doing my apprenticeship with the Pittsburgh Opera, they have, or at least they had at the time, I don't know if they still do, but at the Carnegie Mellon hospital in Pittsburgh, they have a vocal laboratory, and they partnered with them. And so anytime one of the opera singers on the main stage, or even the young artist like us, would have a vocal issue, they'd go over to them, they'd scope chords, make sure it was okay. And having a kind of a scientific mindset about this, I asked the guy who was running that laboratory about different things, like such as vocal fry. Where, you know, when you make your voice do kind of like this, is this dangerous for the voice or is this actually okay? And he said that vocal fry itself is actually okay because you're not getting enough pressure. You're not using enough air and enough pressure with the cords to create any sort of swelling. Mm-hmm. If anything, they're like a little bit floppy going on. And so not dangerous at all. But that certain types of singing like rock and roll, where they need to get those kind of squealing high, that kind of stuff. He said he had certain clients that had vocal nodes on their cords, and it was purposeful because that's how they got that sound. There was a little node on the thin edge of their cord that was preventing the cord from coming clearly all the way together, which would cause like a schism in the sound. Mm. So they could sing certain notes, but it would sound like it was an octave up. Or they would sing certain notes, like, for example, and I don't know he wouldn't say who it was because patient confidentiality. But for example, if you take like Rod Stewart, who sings like this all the time, that's going to create nodes immediately. But that's his signature sound. Mm-hmm. So he would go in, or someone, whoever this person was, would go into this doctor and say, I just want to check on my nodes and make sure they're not too big. They're not too small. So he'd go get scoped and make sure the nodes were in the right place and still healthily being nodes. So it could be something like that that is causing fatigue. I remember Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, I believe he had cysts that were inside his vocal cords that he got surgery for. I think I'm thinking of the right guy.
Yeah, because that was recent. They just had to postpone their whole farewell tour because something happened with his, like, I think he hemorrhaged a vocal cord or something, or...
Oh, that's more recent than I'm thinking of. Actually thinking of like it was like maybe 10 years or more ago.
Could have been.
But it could also be, you know, maybe they got COVID and their apparatus just feels fatigued. It could be an age thing. You know, I just passed the 50-year mark myself this year. I don't feel any signs of slowing down beyond what I went through with this illness. But having had it hit me so hard, I know that age was a factor in all of this. Mm. It could be something as simple as they slept wrong and they got a crick in their neck that maybe the crick is still there, but their musculature has accommodated that crick, but that crick is causing their vocal apparatus to be off by a few centimeters. It's all it takes.
Wow.
A few millimeters. It's all it takes to put the voice box off of its axis because the voice box floats. The voice box actually hangs suspended from the hyoid bone. Here we are talking about.
Keep going. I love this.
It's suspended from, it's the only bone in the body that is not connected to other bones via the tendons.
Mm-hmm.
In between bones is cartilage. Tendons are cartilage. It's supported by, or no, it's not connected by cartilage. It is supported by, I can't remember at this point. I'm gonna have to pull out my Gray's Anatomy.
Gonna pull out the textbooks.
It floats. Yeah. And if the supporting musculature is off, and if the arytenoid muscles are not balanced in space up and down, left, right, because mm-hmm. they're what bring the cords together. If they are misfiring, one or the other or both, it's gone. It could be thyroid issues. If they have an inflamed thyroid, it feels like someone's pressing in with your thumb at the base of your trachea, and you can't get that. For an opera singer, you need like you can see my yeah. larynx here. I can.
Mm-hmm. And if that's at all out of place, it'll completely throw it all off.
Well, if your muscles that you depend on for that keeping it where you need it to be, if any of those muscles are inflamed, if the thyroid is inflamed, if any of the tendons, if your neck is cricked, if your nervous system is misfiring, any of that, if your diaphragm is, if your ribs, if your if you worked out too hard and your pecs are tight, I mean, it's so many things it could be.
Right. Yeah, because I mean, like so many fans online, I mean, they've commented over the years. I mean, you know, you look at John Bon Jovi, for example. I mean, you know, he used to be able to sing, you know, Tommy used to work on the dock. But then this year he's like, Tommy used to work on the dock. Like, it's almost like he can't even get the air or can't get it out. So it's funny we're talking about all this respiratory stuff because it's like maybe it is like an air thing.
Real quick on that, if you have any singers listening to the show, if you're feeling a shortness of breath in the singing, the compression between the cords and the diaphragm pushing the air out and the cords resisting, if you're feeling like air is escaping, this was what was happening to me. My biggest thing that I had difficulty was connecting into the core of my voice. It felt like air was escaping. I couldn't get a deep enough breath. Then I'm taking breaths like this, and then I've got no, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Is a thing, a technique called the slow F. So you're taking a breath, and just as long as you can, because you take the stress off of having to do it from here. You're doing it with your lips. Mm-hmm. And you can gauge with the F, like how much pressure you're using.
Yeah.
You want as to trickle the air out past the F. Mm. And what this does is it gets this all engaged back into its management of air without using this as some sort of mechanism that the air is kind of either slamming up against or flying past. Mm. You get the rib cage, you get the diaphragm.
Goes for as long as you can keep it going.
Yeah, for as long as you can keep it going, that retrains the nervous system to slow down. Even if it's just 5 seconds, the next one, make it 6 seconds. The next one, make it 8 seconds. The next one, you find very quickly that 10 seconds becomes 20 seconds, 20 seconds becomes 30, 30 becomes a minute.
Wow.
You get the breath management back online, then you figure out how to get the cords interacting with that breath management.
Hmm. Interesting. I'm going to have to start trying that.
And also it's a quick way to gauge how much breath is escaping, because your F will tell you if it's like, mm-hmm. okay, that your air is all like flying right out.
It's gone. Yeah.
It's just gone.
Hmm. Okay.
But you don't do it from here. You're not restricting from here.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. And you try and keep it going.
The super quiet F.
Super quiet F. Oh, all right. I made a note of that. I'm going to try that out. look, this is awesome. Fantastic conversation, man. IlDevo.com, 20th anniversary. Go and pick up the vinyl coming out. First time ever. One more time. Let's show it off because it's
This one has the signatures too.
Oh, look at that. Are you guys selling us signed copies, or do you have to come to the show and get that? Or?
We are selling signed copies on the website. We do have, we did have a few of them at the launch party release we had in New York City at the Barnes & Noble. And I just took one because we had sat there like signing it for people. We had signed a big stack of them as well for them to have on hand. And I was like, you know what? I'm taking
it. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Are you one of those guys, do you have like a collection of like every single piece of Il Divo memorabilia or like merch over the years?
I do. Well, we would get from the record company, typically at album release, they give us a certain number of copies, which I would give a few to family and a few to friends.
Yeah.
And then keep a few in reserve in case, you know, I forgot somebody or whatever.
In case, you never know.
And they started to build up over time. And in my basement, I think I have between from across all 10 albums, I've got maybe like 4 or 5 or even maybe 10 of certain albums that I was on tour when I got them and I never did manage to give them out.
Right.
So I got like 10 copies of those sitting around. I got like at least 50 Il Divo CDs. I'm probably Il Divo's biggest fan then because I have 50 Il Divo CDs.
You ever go to like whatever city you're in, just go to the music store and be like, oh, let me go see if they have the CD. Why not? And then you're like, all right, I'll buy my album.
Well, it was actually really funny because in Barnes & Noble, they've put in a music section back in.
Finally, yeah.
They've got vinyl, they've got CDs, and apparently what's happening now because, you know, streaming, everything is streaming, but there's something so impersonal about streaming. So having a piece of memorabilia, it's less about the consumption of music and more about the collection of music. So people who are collectors of things are the people who go out and buy albums and CVDs, less DVDs anymore, but some in Japan, there's the DVD market is still huge.
And you know, they always get the Japanese bonus track. Like I buy my CDs from Japan because just to have that. I mean, I'm the physical. I just interviewed the guitar player for Shinedown. Like I pulled out my record. I mean, like you can't beat physical, you know, like it's all about, I always joke, I can't go to the show and get my Apple Music signed. I can't get my Spotify signed.
It's true. You can't unless you get it by an NFT, which is that even a thing anymore?
I think that's dead in the water. Nobody talks about that at all. All right. Yeah, I don't. I haven't seen anybody talk about that in forever. So probably done.
So flash in the pan that was.
Yeah. Everybody's blockchains, all this, all that. It's
Yeah.
It's always, you know, but you know what? Vinyl CDs, you can't go wrong. It's always, you're always going to have it. And when Spotify and Apple Music goes out of, once out of business or whatever, at least you'll be able to go pull your Il Divo CD out of the collection and slap it on, you know?
Yeah. I mean, God forbid the, whatever it is that causes, the something like The Walking Dead or worse.
Yeah.
And the internet goes down. You know, some sort of
What is that called?
Apocalyptic.
I mean, like an apocalyptic event. No, there's like a something
some
surge.
Sort of apocalyptic event. You know, what are you gonna have? Well, and if the grid goes down, you know, the only thing you can really use is vinyl. Even if you know the speaker isn't working, you can just run it around like that, and you can hear it from the needle.
Yeah. You can just put your ear right to it. You know.
Just so random.
So many times I've done that. And you know what? Surprisingly loud too.
What's that?
It's surprisingly loud too. If you put your ear to it, you can actually hear the record playing.
Yeah.
IlDivo.com. Tour is going to be kicking off. There's a date in Mexico City, all this in April. And then, of course, May 2nd. That's pretty much when the tour kicks off. And you're running all the way through to the summertime, all the way through to fall. So you're going to be busy next little while. I'm going to have to try and come out and catch a show at some point.
Where are you based?
I'm in Montreal, Canada. So,
oh yeah, love Montreal. We have not played there in forever. I typically don't look at the schedule because I just let the tour manager kind of push me from place to place to place. But it's been a minute since we've been to Montreal. I gotta look and see if we got a Canada leg coming up. I hope we do.
And ironically, it's funny because my agent actually, Barry Garber. And Angela, they did a couple of shows with you guys last year they do a bunch of shows in Costa Rica and stuff. So I text my Aunt Angela, his assistant. I was like, yo, I'm interviewing David from my LV. She's like, oh my God, they're so nice. We love doing shows with them. Tell them I said hi. So it's funny that they're based in Montreal, but they do shows in South America. So it's kind of funny. Yeah.
Oh, fun. Thanks for passing that along.
So, LDVO.com. Go and check it out. This is fantastic. And, next time you come back on, really, you're welcome back anytime, first of all. We'll have a full discussion about voices stuff. That'd be fun.
I'd love it. There's so few people I get to talk about this with.
We'll get technical. And we'll see if my voice improves by then. I'll use some of your tips.
Hey, slow app.
Yeah, slow app. I'm supposed to go over to Sweden in a couple of weeks to try and start tracking. We'll see if my voice is up to par. God.
Oh, cool. Love Sweden. Well, a lot of the material off the first few albums we recorded in Sweden.
I was going to say, I was looking at the credits and like you guys were recording in Stockholm and like a bunch of stuff. It's amazing how a lot of these records are done in Europe and then they just, blow up.
Yeah. Our producers were, we had three separate producers who were kind of part of an amalgamation with each other.
Was that like Max Martin's crew or were those the other guys?
Were they part of Max Martin's crew? I can't remember. I want to say yes.
They probably
were. We'll just say yes. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. it's not something you're allowed to be in this day and age. Wrong.
Oh, no, you're allowed to be. Don't worry.
You just have to double down and say I'm right until you get canceled.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I don't think you're going to get canceled off this. You'll be fine. David Miller announcing his commitment to our Lord and Savior, Satan himself. I'm just kidding. No. There you go. There's canceled.
Santa, Satan. Yes.
Yeah.
Where do you draw the line?
Big Pharma.
I see your colors are red and white. Psychedelic mushrooms. We're not even going to go there.
White. It's for cocaine. I mean, we're everywhere.
Oh, my God.
Red for the blood and the. There you go. That's a good album title for Old Evo. Blood and cocaine.
This has gone to a very dark place.
Very dark place. Your fans would be like, what is going on?
What is even happening?
Yeah. All right. Well, David, thanks a lot for chatting. Appreciate taking some time. I know we went a lot longer than we were expecting to, but this was awesome.
Yeah. Hey, I was having fun. Who cares?
Love it.
The Jeremy White Show.
Get exclusive interviews and bonus content on demand now. Visit youtube.com/Jeremy White Show.